Hey everybody, welcome back to Braving the Journey. I'm your host, Zach Mather. Today I'm talking with a friend, Nate Rifkin. He has published a book on the ancient form of meditation from the Taoist tradition. I think you're going to really love what he has to share with us today. Nate used to be suicidal, drank alcohol every single day, every morning to get just through the day. He was a dropout, college, went broke, bankrupt, you name it. This guy kind of had a tough time. And then he managed to turn his life around and he began to do that through meditation. And we're going to talk a lot about that today because I think meditation sometimes has this bad rap, like not a bad rap, but it has this like confusion of like, what is it? How do I do it? I don't do it right. I don't understand it. And so we dive into those parts that people oftentimes have their questions about it, like just trying to understand it better and learn to utilize it as a practice. And I believe so much as we move through life, we need to create, just like Nate teaches us through this time of talking, create the space to let us feel the emotions that we have. This podcast is a beautiful podcast. It just dives into so much that I'm really excited for you guys to listen to it. So make sure to check it out. Here we go. All right, you guys, welcome back to Braving the Journey. I have Nate Rifkin on, and I'm excited to get for you guys to get a chance to just hear everything that Nate is talking about. He recently wrote a book, The Standing Meditation. We'll talk more about that later. It'll all be in there. But I just want to say, Nate, man, thank you for being on the show. Thanks for taking the time to be here.
Hey, I'm honored to be here, Zach, and I hope what I have to share will really have an impact on the people listening.
I believe it will. I really do. But one of the things Nate and I, you and I were talking about earlier before we started the show was just this idea that stories are so impactful, and that when you and I struggle through stuff and we have a tendency to think we're the only one struggling, we move towards isolation versus community. Mm-hmm. And so one of the things I do at the beginning of every show is I want to create space for you to get to share with us your story, because I believe your story is your story that will people are able to connect and hear and go, man, I connect to that and I relate to that. And it helps create a space for them to go, I'm not alone in whatever I'm going through. So I want to hear your story from, you know, I mean, we're talking a guy that was drank almost every single morning to just get through the day, suicidal, you know, the guy on the corner of the street waving the sign that you drive by and you go, I don't ever want to be that guy. That was you, you know, to writing this book, The Standing Meditation. I go, okay, what happened? What happened to where and why did the drinking start, and how did you get to a space where you are now? I'm going to let you take it away.
Well, thank you. I was born into a family that was not equipped to raise children. Parents that really were very shut down emotionally. And I didn't understand what was going on, and I didn't think there was anything strange about it. I just grew up in a loveless household. So yeah. I was, as my dad would later tell me, a pretty angry kid from the beginning. And as I grew up, the anger turned into depression. And we can talk more about that later, but based on what I've been studying, what I found in my life, when someone is hurt, when they undergo a trauma, or a consistent, you know, shock, and they want to defend themselves and get angry about it, and they're not able to release that anger, they get depressed. So as I grew up and became a teenager, I got more and more depressed, and I think the older I got, the worse things got, because I was supposed to be growing up and making friends, and I really wasn't able to. I had some superficial kind of acquaintances, but nothing lasted. Nothing really had an open-hearted quality to it. Yeah. So I got more depressed. And then in junior high school and high school, I wanted to start dating and I wanted to meet women. And I was a completely awkward, emotionally shut down person. And I was a very unattractive person in that way. Also kind of, I mean, I had horrible acne and all that, so I had everything not going.
Yeah,
for me.
Yeah, the awkward teen years where you're like, I think everybody has them. Oh, you know, if we're honest. So
yeah, if anything, sometimes if you sail through that time in your life, it can set you up for more challenges because you don't kind of grow as a result. Well, I had a lot of stuff that was going to get me to grow later. Let's put it that way. So I thought to myself, I mean, it was bad. I was really depressed. And I thought to myself, well, I'm going to go to college and I'm going to get out of my environment and I'm going to start over. I'm going to start over fresh. And as a result, I'm going to be able to change my life like that. It's going to be great. Yeah. Well, I went to college. I went to UMass Amherst. And within like my first day there, I realized I'd been so foolish because I could move however many miles away from my home, from my town, from the people that knew me and that I knew. But I was still the same person on the inside. So I was dragging all those same emotional patterns with me.
Yeah. Just because you didn't have the people around you telling you who you were, you were still telling yourself that that's who you were. Yeah.
And it was buried so deeply that it was guiding my every thought. It was guiding my every action. And it was like, I felt like it was already installed, but I didn't even know how to change it or what to do. Well, I didn't know. I really did not know.
Yeah.
So around this time, my one glimmer of hope was that I wanted to be some kind of an entrepreneur or business owner or self-employed in some way. And I really loved exercise. I really loved working out and lifting weights. So I was like, somehow I'm going to do something with that. And I hated college. I hated it so much. I had no personal life, and everyone else around me, they seemed like they're having so much fun and partying. So I thought everyone else was like perfect.
Yeah.
And that spilled over to my grades because I just didn't care about my classes. Because if you're feeling bad about yourself, you can't really be motivated to like really improve your overall life.
Yeah.
So I eventually decided like, if I'm going to be that business owner, if I'm going to be that entrepreneur or self-employed or whatever, what are the chances I really, really, really need this college degree? And why am I waiting? Why am I in a miserable situation waiting for some graduation years in the future? And when you're like 19 years old, 4 years seems still like an eternity.
Oh, yeah.
So I decided I'm dropping out. I'm gone. I'm bouncing. So by my third semester, I'd made this decision, and I was like a ghost on campus. I stayed there the last remaining months, not talking to anyone. And then I went home. So I started studying marketing. I started studying business just on my own, however I could get my hands on this information. And this was like 2005, about? Okay. It was around 2005. So I had a knack for writing, and I did have a knack for marketing. So I started a couple of ventures. One was with my brother selling information on like how to get in shape, how to like make your joints feel better. And he was kind of the star of the show because he was my older brother and he had a lot of experience there. And I was kind of like the marketing guy.
Yeah.
And we had some hit or miss success because I had a knack for advertising, but I had no idea about the fundamentals of business. So it was hit or miss, and then the misses started to add up, and the hits started to go down. And I did the old thing. A lot of us have been there where it's just like, all right, let me use this credit card this month, and look, rack that one up, and let me use this one over here. And all of a sudden, when the bills come for the minimum payments, I'll just let the envelope just kind of sit on the floor, and something will come on top of it. Oh, the bill's gone.
Yep. Oh, it's terrible.
Bad strategy. And I was living I moved into a condo on my own at this time. And I lived by myself. I moved to Boulder, Colorado, I grew up on the East Coast, Massachusetts. So I just moved like over 1,000 miles away, 1,500 miles away, whatever. I was all alone. I really loved the area where I lived, but I had no idea how to make friends. I could not get a date to save my life. And in my mind, I'm just like, oh, well, I'm going to focus on business. But the isolation was killing me. And I eventually, financially started my death spiral, basically, I was feeling so depressed and sorry for myself and really just so frustrated that I began drinking alcohol every morning. So I'd have like I'd pour myself this much vodka and then add on like this much of an energy drink. That was my breakfast.
Oh, that's a good breakfast right there. Just healthy as could be.
Jeepers. Oh, yeah. the stuff we tell ourselves. I mean, I know, sure. You know, here's the thing. I was really, really, really into self-help during all this. Like, I really was. I would set goals for myself. I'd write them down. I'd print them out, paste them up there. I had a vision board. I did the visualization and all kinds of other stuff, like positive affirmations. And I really tried. Like, I really was into it.
Yeah.
And when it didn't work out, that's when I really hit my lowest point, because now I really felt betrayed and lost. Like, I thought I was supposed to be able to choose my own destiny and make things come about by thinking in a certain way. So that was probably that was my low point in life, because that's when I started to feel like I want to kill myself. And the drinking alcohol was kind of my lifeline. And I started spiraling toward having not only no money, but no available credit. So that was like my rock bottom. And if I'm going to be perfectly honest, the money side of things and the business side of things scared me. It created a lot of fear and it was really frustrating, but the suicidal feelings had nothing to do with that. It was more because I felt so lonely and I felt like such a loser. And that was why. So that was my low point. The way I started to like turn things around was that I had a mentor in business at the time who was into a spiritual tradition called Taoism. And he started teaching more meditative stuff. He started diving into more of the spiritual side of things. And he taught me a meditation. It happened to be done standing up instead of, quietly on a cushion. And this meditation it felt pretty cool to do. I was kind of like, ooh, it was kind of interesting. It's from something called Taoism, and these cool like martial artists, legends have it, they would live longer because of these meditations and like become spiritually enlightened. And I the more I learned, the more I was like kind of intrigued by it. It felt kind of exotic.
Yeah.
And Taoism is a pretty neat spiritual tradition. If anyone's like, if you've seen Star Wars, the character Yoda, that dude was a Taoist, straight up.
My son's a Star Wars fanatic. So yes, I can connect to that. I'm like, okay, that makes sense.
Cool. Whoever helped out George Lucas with that screenplay was connected to Taoism. They knew a thing or two. So just think Yoda. Here's the really weird part. And this is just my journey. All I can report is what happened to me. I started doing this meditation every morning, and I started just with like 60 seconds. And then I would add like 5 seconds a day. Hmm. So I started feeling pretty good. And then after it, I would still go have my drink. Like I wasn't stopping.
Right.
But a funny thing happened. The more I did this meditation, the better I felt and the better I felt. And then I drink and I kind of feel even better. I just love the sensation. So then I kept doing the meditation and I realized one day I took a drink after I meditated and I didn't feel any better or worse. I just felt kind of drunk. So I'm like, isn't that interesting? I wonder what's going to happen if this trend continues. Like within a day or two, I meditated and then I went and I drank alcohol, and I was feeling so good that the set point for what alcohol did for me actually made me feel a little bit worse. Hmm. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I stopped cold turkey after that day. I still remember I had the bottle in my freezer and I never touched it. The only time I ever touched it again was when I poured it out like a year or two, I forget when. It was like a couple of years later when I moved out of the condo.
Yeah.
So that was what happened to me. I'm not necessarily saying it's going to be a result for anyone else, because I think we all sort of get into habits like drinking. You know, everyone's kind of pretty individual in that way for what triggers it and how they can eventually walk their way out of that. But that's what happened to me.
No, I love, so there's a couple things in your story that I just want to highlight that I love hearing, because like you said, we're all so different, right? Like what works for you, and we can learn and put the things into practice and try them, right? But I love that, like for you, there's so much hype sometimes about this, like if you just tell yourself you could do it and will yourself to do it and have positive thoughts. And those are good things to have. Like those are beneficial, but sometimes we get stuck being like, well, nothing changed, so I must not be talking to myself right or doing it right or handling it right. And so then you're already back in the shame spot. Like I can't even do this right.
Yeah. We loop
and we're stuck there. And for you, like you kind of did that, but then you moved to something else and go, okay, I'm exploring this meditation practice, and you got to watch that develop and grow. And I think there's something so beautiful about that, that you just didn't get stuck in the loop, but you were able to go, I'm going to try something else. You know, and I think meditation has such a funny, personally, I got stigma around it. Like, oh, it's a meditation thing. Like, oh, I don't really get it. Like, oh, it must be really hard, or I don't know how to. Like, you know, there's so much around it that I go, I want you to kind of speak to that, you know, in regards of like, I think sometimes people just, they kind of check it and go, I can't do that. There's no way I can. I don't know how to. You know, and even in your story, you had these little, like, I love your, like, I don't even know if you're aware of how you, like, describe it, but you're like, I just started with six, you know, like, 1 minute. And then I added, like, 30 seconds each day. And, like, there's such power in that. It's like the compounding effect. Like, we do it with our money. You just did it with meditation, right?
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And it's interesting because as part of my kind of self-help journey, I had dabbled in some kind of more, let's call them just like watered down, like kind of more pop culture meditation. And I experienced the exact same kind of frustrations and confusion you talked about. Because what happened to me, and I find this happens with a lot of people, is that it's just like, oh, okay, I read that I'm supposed to like sit down and quiet my mind.
Yeah.
Or sit down and observe my thoughts. And they sit down and they just, you feel restless. You feel like, oh, I can't quiet my mind. This is frustrating. It's not for me. And I didn't get these great results. In fact, sometimes you even feel worse. So when I did it, I felt like when I start doing the more kind of pop culture meditation, I was just like, I just kind of feel hazy afterward. I don't know. This isn't really doing much good. And unfortunately, I just didn't know. And most people don't know is that they're introduced to meditation in a few different ways. Mostly, I think today people are introduced as a form of like, it's almost like the same culture. It's like, oh, let's talk about biohacks or something like that, or let's enhance performance or focus. So it's just like, meditation is a great way to like develop more focus and effectiveness. If you want to do something, take 5 minutes out of your day and meditate. And if that works for you, that's great. What I didn't realize, what I didn't understand is that, one, when you sit down to do a quiet meditation, my teachers would call it a quiescent meditation. The purpose of it is to sit and let your old emotional programming and old emotional gunk and hurts and wounding come to the surface. Like when you start, that's what's going to happen.
Yeah.
And nobody's warned about this, or few people are. Yeah. So, I say the word warned deliberately because when this stuff starts bubbling up, it could be a memory from an argument or some tragic event 20 years ago, or how someone hurt you, or an argument you had a week ago, something that has not been processed properly and that has been buried in you. When it bubbles up, we start thinking, oh, I'm having these worse thoughts. My mind is looping on this. This is bad. This is wrong.
Yep.
No, it's not wrong. It's like cleaning out the refrigerator. Of course, it's going to smell bad, but you're going to have a much cleaner fridge as a result when you're done. So when you start a meditative practice, you're going to have stuff come up, and it's not going to be pleasant stuff probably. And instead of feeling bad about that, honor that and be and actually be glad and kind of give yourself a little pat on the back. And that's where the idea comes in, where the thought pops up and then you let it go. Because most people kind of hear about that, but they don't hear about the reason behind that is because your body, when you're in that quiet meditative state, is acting like a self-cleaning oven. It's burning through this stuff. So
I don't think I've I don't think I've ever heard that approach. You know what I mean? Like I've experienced it, you know, but then if you don't hear it, you probably think you're doing it wrong, which is funny, you know? So,
And I'm kind of like, I love talking about this stuff because it's great that people are getting into it. You know, you even have like apps for meditation now these days. So, but the trouble is, and I think in people's efforts to simplify the practice and kind of make it user-friendly, they leave out the stuff that can actually, it's helpful for people to know. So the way to harness this information is in your meditative practice, treat it almost like a workout that you commit yourself to. Because as you progress, what's going to happen is you're going to fully process these old wounds and traumas. And then your mind really is going to get more quiet eventually. So the idea is it's not like a 5-minute break to enhance like your life, your focus, your calmness. It's something you do as a way to process that old emotional wounding and let all the unhealed and kind of unresolved pain and thoughts bubble up so that you really can just let it go. And that way, if you have a session where you sit down and your mind is like really peaceful and calm and you walk away feeling good, that's great. If you have a session where it's like your mind's bouncing around like a ping pong ball, great.
Yeah.
Because you're going to be working through both, and you can't really have one without the other.
Yeah. You know? I mean, there's so much truth to that because I think about how much noise we put into our day and our life and our world. Like I go from a house with my kids and, you know, family, and there's probably music in the background. I get in my car, music turns on, you know, I get out of my car, my earpods go in my ear and a podcast starts playing. Like that's consistent. Right. Mm-hmm. And if we do that, what I know for me, I'll just talk to for myself when I'm doing that, sometimes I'm blocking out something I know that needs to be processed, but it's easier to just keep moving forward than to stop and let it process, you know? Yeah. So what you're talking about is the invitation to go to create mental space and your whole entire being and body space to go, I need to release this and let this out and let this flow through me, you know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And, it ties back actually back to what we were talking about earlier with positive thinking. The positive thinking when you're engaging your conscious mind can actually be on the same level as that noise and that chatter. And the reason why we still end up like self-sabotaging, even when we really, really try to keep our thoughts positive, which like you said, it's a good thing.
Yeah.
It's because of this more deeply buried emotional wounding that cannot be accessed unless we go to that place. So we're kind of like through our day, we're being distracted from the very space that would actually allow us to process the stuff that we need to get rid of so that our positive thinking can actually shine deeply enough to guide our lives.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So talk, I'm at this space personally where I'm just intrigued. I'm like, all right, like teach me. So like, teach me, you know, as you talk, like where does someone start in this process or what's it? I mean, I'm kind of even back to this, like standing meditation versus sitting, like where, you know, talk to, there's so much, I have tons of questions. I'm going to let you just go.
Okay. Well, you know what? I could share a great exercise. We can do it very briefly and it's perfect because while we're just sitting comfortably, we can do this. One of the greatest techniques I've found for entering that space is to do so, that meditative space, is to do so in a very roundabout way. Because when you try and quiet your mind with your mind, you're going to end up looping. So instead, it's better, I found, to focus on your body with deep breathing. And a great way to do that is you could place one hand on your chest,
okay,
and then one hand on your abdomen area, like right over your belly button.
Yeah.
And when you start breathing deeply, you can monitor it and kind of teach yourself to breathe deeply, because when you do so, your hand on your belly is going to start rising and falling with your breath.
Right.
And your aim is to keep this hand still so that it does not rise.
So the chest isn't rising, but the belly is. Okay.
Exactly. And then what you do from there is you can actually even imagine that there's like a ball or like a sun, a glowing sun in your belly area. So not only is your belly going up and down, and this is in your imagination,
right,
it's even your torso at that level and your belly is expanding in all sides. So your front, your lower back can feel more full. The sides of your waist just above your hips kind of feels more full and warm. And then the final layer to add to that is you can watch yourself in a mirror and make sure that your shoulders actually stay down even when you inhale. Because I used to do this forever. I'd be like, oh, yeah, sure, I'll take a deep breath. My shoulders would go up. And I'm like, but I'm not – my chest isn't going up. Yeah, but my shoulders are. So that when that happens, you're developing tension as your lungs only partially inflate. When your lungs are truly inflating to their full potential, it actually pushes down on the organs of your belly, which massages them, which, by the way, starts releasing more emotional gunk. And as a result of this, you're training yourself to relax your muscles with your deep breathing. Mm-hmm. So you say to yourself, you know, breathe in and keep my shoulders relaxed, and breathe out and have them relax even more.
Yeah.
This gives your mind a bone to chew on. It gives your mind a focus. So it's sort of a way to relax away the chatter, because your mind is a tremendous focusing tool. Like it's always going to be processing some kind of information. So you might as well have it process all the wonderful feelings of breathing into your belly.
Yeah. Well, that makes sense, because if I don't give my mind like a task, you know, the subconscious will kick in, or it's going to run and do its own thing, you know? And so
you
have to give it a job at that point. Makes sense.
Yeah. And that job you give it it's like an onboarding, like ramp to a freeway. And once you get into that state where you're more relaxed, you know, there's a phrase that you can even use is where the more I relax, the better I feel, the deeper I go. The deeper I go, the more I relax, and so on. Because eventually, when you start feeling really good and have the energy focused in your belly and your muscles are more relaxed, your mind will actually have a much easier time going quiet. It's almost like you're spiraling into it and you eventually fall into it. Yeah. And when you do, oftentimes what happens is you forget to breathe. And that's fine, too.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've ever had that experience where you're kind of meditating and all of a sudden you're just like, oh, I have to take a breath.
Yeah. What? So what is I don't want to sound like a goal-oriented question, in the practice of meditation, have you discovered that there's like a space and a time where if you can get to where, you know, you're meditating in this long a time, there's a better, like, result versus like short, like quick little intervals, or, you know, what does your practice look like? How about that?
Sure. Well, I mean, no, it's a great question, because I actually found there is, because the idea is if you meditate for a certain number of minutes, like 3 to 5 minutes, this is giving your central nervous system time to wind down.
Okay.
So it's think of it as like a diving down into the ocean. You're going to go deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper. That's the idea anyway. And you can only go so deep as you're able to swim. So within the first few minutes, your central nervous system is unwinding, which is a wonderful thing. But if you go longer, your practice is going to get even better, and you're going to reach those places that you wouldn't if you just did, you know, 2 or 3 minutes here and there. Now, as far as my progression went, when I was turning my life around, I started with 60 seconds. And then I bumped up like 5 seconds per day, but then I accelerated. I was like, all right, I got the hang of this. I've built a habit. So I can add 10 seconds. I can add 30 seconds. And then eventually I got up to like 8 or 10 minutes. And once I surpassed that, it was less of a physical thing. And that's when it became more of an emotional journey. And then, eventually I made it, I stopped at like 25 minutes. So I would just do 25 minutes and that was like my daily thing. And at that point it became very much of an emotional, mental, spiritual practice. So I think getting up to 25 minutes a day, if someone wants to go the route of turning this into a spiritual practice, is a good benchmark. And if they just want to work with their emotions, I think 15 minutes is a great benchmark for that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Talk to me about your book, The Standing Meditation. You know, what's the heart behind it and where does it kind of guide people in that?
Well, the book basically describes my journey of doing this practice, and it guides people not only in exactly like how to do this Taoist meditation, because that was a spiritual tradition that resonated with me. It gives people a dive into the energy behind the meditation, how that works, and it dives into how to really integrate a spiritual walk in your day-to-day life, because it's something I kind of stumbled and fumbled through because I just didn't know what was going on. But I kind of wrote down and described how to integrate, how to build the habit of meditating. I described where does the role of like effort come in versus the spiritual idea of surrender, because that I found it can be a very confusing topic when people just mention it. So I described exactly with my story how I did that and the role of how to relate to your emotions and how to relate to your social life and how to navigate those waters. So that's what I dive into in the book.
What is Taoist, I'm not strongly familiar with, but like how would the ancient Taoists like view the challenging situations and overcoming? Like what is that from their view and practice that you have been able to learn from them and bring into what you do?
The one sentence sort of idea behind Taoism is finding harmony through balance. So like kind of like Yoda, the Taoists are very big on being one with nature, and their idea is of that practice is to become one with the Tao, and the Tao is like the way, the natural way, the virtuous way of all things. So when Taoists would encounter a challenge, their mindset is it's one of two things. One, it's part of my life's karma. And when I say karma, that could be a loaded word. So what I mean by karma is not necessarily like, oh, punishment or something, this is coming back to haunt you. It's more like, this is why I'm here in life. This is part of one of the challenges that I am meant to overcome. It was on my to-do list when I came into and was born on this planet.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, or this is a result of kind of a ripple effect of an action that I set into motion years ago. Like for me personally, I grew up as a angry kid, teenager, and I became very depressed. So I had to deal with the ripple effects of the isolation I fell into. And I had to learn how to be a more caring, compassionate person. And I also had part of my meditation was that I actually opened myself up to be a more compassionate person. Mm-hmm. So a Taoist would look at every challenge, and the cool part is whether it's part of one's karma or just a lifelong karma, or whether it's part of that ripple effect that they create through their actions, the answer is the same. And the answer is, okay, this is a situation that I can learn from. I accept that it's happening. And I understand that whatever my first like emotional shock is going to be, whether it's I get really riled up and angry, or whether I get very fearful or worried or sad, or if I grieve over it, it's natural to have an emotional response to it. The Taoists, what they do when they walk through life is that they acknowledge the emotion, They let themselves feel the emotion and they're okay with that. Yep. It's nothing to fight against. It's nothing to struggle away from, because either way, you're giving energy to that emotional response. Instead, it's give your energy to what is the lesson that I'm being given right now, so that number one, I can resolve the situation, and number two, be a better, more virtuous person as a result. Because in the spiritual walk, when we encounter a challenge, there's a lesson buried in it. And as soon as we unearth and realize that lesson, there's a very, very strong chance that the challenge will just evaporate.
Yeah.
Because I don't know if you've ever experienced this, where you get hit with a challenge like over and over again. And it's just like, really? Again?
Yeah.
This is happening again?
Yeah, absolutely.
So
it's funny, awesome. Like talking about feeling your emotions, I feel like, I think in a weird way, at least in the culture, I guess we grew up in, probably feeling emotions wasn't really a thing, you know, like you kind of avoided emotions. And if you had emotions that didn't fit the situation, then you were told not to have them. You know, and I'm a parent now of three kids, and I watch my wife do this really well. Like even last night, for example, my youngest 4-year-old wanted to sleep in the new bed that we just got a foster kid. So we put a different bed in the room, and she really wanted that bed, and she had really big emotions about it. Right. Mm-hmm. Our normal tendency is like, hey, don't cry about that. It's, you know, like this is the way it is. And I watched my wife even last night with her just sit and go, that's a really hard emotion. I mean, that's a hard feeling. You must feel that emotion. And like, she sat with her in the emotion. She didn't try to solve the emotion, which we have a tendency to normally try to solve it. They just sat in it. And then she let her feel it, and it was over like which bed she was going to sleep in for a 4-year-old. But, you know, and then it moved past, and she moved past, and then there was no resolution to it. She still had to sleep in her own bed, but she got to feel the sadness that why don't I get the new bed is basically it. Like why does, and her belief was, you know, why does the foster kid that just came into our house get everything? Why do I have, why don't I? And we could have easily moved past that and just pushed it away. But I watched my wife engage with it. And that's what you're talking about, the invitation for ourselves to be able to go like, how do we engage with our feelings and not just walk past them, you know?
Yeah. And that's beautiful. Because think about that moment. I mean, that's beautiful that your wife did that, because that's an example of letting the emotion come up, letting it process. And that is the natural way that we're best to live. That is harmony to balancing out that emotion. And as a result, the energy behind that emotion is never going to crystallize. The flow is going to continue. The energy is going to keep flowing, and her life will be, you know, great in that respect as a result. If, let's say, another parent out there took it the other way and shamed or blamed the child for feeling something, what's going to happen, or what will probably happen, is that the emotion will crystallize.
Yeah.
The energy will crystallize. It'll get buried. And then there might be a lingering coping mechanism and belief system that gets put in place as a result, that other people always get what they want. Other people always have it better. I don't get what I want. And then their life starts unfolding in that way. So that's an awesome story of just like showing it could have gone one of two ways. And we've all been there, because we've all had, I mean, I think probably every single child on the face of the planet has had the situation where stuff does get crystallized. I think it's actually part of why we're here. So the answer is, by walking the spiritual path and doing meditative practices, we can go and redo that moment. We can redo it and uncrystallize what got trapped within us, and it's never too late. We can always process what was not processed when we were a child.
Yeah. No, I think that's beautiful. I mean, for me, one of the things I know I learned a couple of years ago, I was kind of taught this idea that to learn when a feeling arises, or whatever it is, like to be able to stop and ask myself the simple question of going, and I ask it, you know, I'll ask God, for me personally, I'll go, hey, God, what do you want me to know about the situation and the feeling that I'm in right now? and just sit in silence after that. Just a moment and just go, what do you want me to know and feel? And there's usually, it's not like an audible booming voice. It's like this internal same, it sounds like me, but it's a voice that goes, and it'll teach me something. It'll tell me truth about the situation. Or a lot of times I'll ask it in the other way of like, what lies am I believing about this based off of what I was taught as a child? And there's a lot of lies that I believe still that if I don't ask the question, they go unchecked sometimes, you know, or if I don't go to a meditative space where I'm able to allow those lies to kind of surface and, you know, retell the story in a new way.
So. That's awesome. Yeah. I think it's beautiful because how rarely, you know, do most people ask themselves questions when they're in that state, empowering questions. So
Sometimes my wife has to encourage me to be like, hey, have you asked God what he wants you to know about this situation? I'm like, no, like, you know, and I'm like, but I should, and I will now, you know? And so, yeah. So sometimes it takes encouragement of others. What do you recommend? So someone hearing this for the very first time, listening to this podcast, going, hey, I'm excited. I'm going to check out Nate's book, but they're going, I want to start this simply beginning the practice meditation. What is your encouragement to them as someone that just goes, I've never done this, I don't know what to do? Where would you tell them to begin?
Well, I think the exercise we kind of went through when talked I described it with the breathing, that's a great, that for the physical side of it, and of course the directing the mind side of it, that's a great way to start. And also I would encourage someone just getting started to do what I did, because I kind of fell into this very great way to integrate a new habit into one's life. So I started I did a daily morning meditation, and it was after I got out of bed and showered, and then I would do the meditation, and then I would back then I drank alcohol after that. So I think it's really, really helpful to choose a slot in your schedule where you might engage in like an indulgence or a habit you're trying to get rid of, like say someone might be eating a dessert or something like that, and do the meditation right before that. So basically you're telling yourself, it's like, look, I'm going to go eat that dessert or whatever the vice is. But first I'm going to do 60 seconds of this deep breathing. And pick something where you're able to do it daily. So pick a slot in your schedule. It doesn't necessarily have to be a time, but it's like in between this and this, I'm going to do that 60 seconds. I'm going to do 60 seconds before I start scrolling on social media, or before I check email, or before I pop on Netflix, and get into that groove. Because what you're doing is you're rewiring your brain. You're rewiring your brain to the point where pretty soon you will have an identity of, I am someone who meditates daily, and it'll start to feel weird and uncomfortable if you don't. At that point, you are empowered. So you can add a little bit when you feel comfortable. And if you do that, you're actually programming yourself to being comfortable being a daily meditator. It'll be within your comfort zone. And when you've got a habit like daily meditation that's within your comfort zone, and you'd feel strange if you avoided it, boy, you have started that. Well, there's an old Taoist quote, the journey of 1,000 miles begins with one step. You've just taken the hard, if you do that, you've just taken the hardest steps, and the rest of that journey, you're going to be like on a motorcycle. It's going to be great.
Yeah. Hey man, I love it. I love what you're doing. What is the best way for people to get a chance to connect to you?
There's two ways. I've got a website where I write regularly, and it's just my name, naterifkin.com. Okay. And for the book, thestandingmeditation.com. And that right now it just forwards straight to the page where people can get on Amazon.
Perfect. Love it. Absolutely love it. Well, hey, before we go, my last question for you is, I always like to ask. So imagine the world goes quiet. I mean, like social media shuts down for a minute, and everyone is actually just listening to you tell, and you get one chance to kind of tell the world one truth that you just went, go, I want the world to hear and know this. What would that truth be?
That's a good question. Or imagining the spotlight on me. You know, honestly, if I really had a chance and people were going to take a chance to listen to me, I would take them through that deep breathing exercise, because I think there's a lot of knowledge out there. We're in a time of life where there's no shortage of knowledge. You know, we can scroll through our feed and see all kinds of memes and stuff, and some of them are really cool, and they're phrased way better than I ever could phrase knowledge. Yeah. So I would just take people through that deep breathing exercise so we could all enjoy that moment of quiet. And if I had to, all right, Nate, you got to say something. I'd be like,
nope, I'll take that. I like that.
Okay. Yeah, cool. Yeah. And I would just say it's very real and it's very beneficial. The energy is very real.
Can you guide us? Can you guide us through, kind of a meditation space right now?
Gosh, yeah. Cause yeah, absolutely. Because everyone at this point, you got the directions of it. So yeah. we could just take ourselves through 10 breaths. So put your hand on your chest, put your hand on your belly, and, I'll talk you through it. Okay. So inhale into your belly. And imagine that glowing sun, and then relax, let the breath out, and the sun continues glowing. Take another breath into your belly and feel that sun get warmer. And you can imagine it's brighter. And then you inhale again, and you notice how you can imagine the side of your waist and even your lower back gently expanding. It's not a muscular thing. It's just in your mind. And exhale. And inhale again, and the sun glows even brighter. And you notice how your shoulders, they can lower even more and relax even more. And then exhale and inhale again. And that sun is glowing so bright. It's kind of shining outside your torso. And then inhale again. And it's glowing so bright, it's rays of light from that little sun in your belly are reflecting on the walls. And inhale again. And your shoulders relax even more. It's like the glow from the sun is melting them. And inhale again. And exhale. And inhale again. And exhale. And now you know that sun is in you, and you can take it with you for the rest of your day. Even as you open your eyes and come out of this meditation.
Hey, you guys, I hope you didn't skip out on that ending little meditation part. I just want to remind us that when we talk about meditation, they say it's a practice. And just like a practice, the more we do it, the better we get at learning how to create space for our feelings to rise up. And when we let our feelings rise up, then we can be aware of them, and they don't control us. We have choice to look at them and see them and say, be thankful for getting to feel the feeling, and then choose what we want to do with it. But we can't do that if we don't slow down enough. And I'm talking to myself in this right now. I get busy. I get busy going, life gets going, and then I forget. And so this podcast for you is just as much for you as it is for me. It's one of those things where I look at it, I go, man, I really do want to get better at just creating the space to meditate and just learn how to let those feelings that I have rise up. Hey, I want to briefly just say, hey, if you like this podcast, you like Braving the Journey, like the episode, please go to the bottom and leave a rating, leave a review, share it with a friend. I mean, honestly, one of the best things that you could do is you could take this episode, go get the direct link for it, and text it directly to a friend and say, hey, I want you to listen to this. I think it was really powerful, and I think it'd be good for you to hear. You become their hero. You care. You're showing that you care about somebody else by sending them this. That's all I got, you guys. Have an amazing, amazing day.